Chapter 2, Hypothesis. Senec watched the human and his cousin conversing, noting the gentle tilt of Kirk's head, indicating interest. Spock's own posture had loosened, his shoulders parallel to Kirk's, also in apparent interest of the other. Senec inched closer, wondering if he could determine the diameter of Kirk's pupils from this angle. "Hey, kiddo, do you need something?" a waitress asked in a condescending tone. Senec stood up from his hidden vantage point and turned. "No, thank you," Senec replied. "You shouldn't be spying on adults," she said, shifting her tray of beverages to one hand. "I am not spying," Senec replied flatly. Spying indicated subterfuge. He was engaging in science. The waitress shrugged and left Senec to continue his observations behind the artificial ferns, and to start calculating Kirk's breathing patterns, which might be elevated. When Senec finally emerged from the artificial ferns to take his seat, Spock and Kirk had obviously allowed the conversation to end. Kirk was looking at the poor reproduction of artwork on the wall, chewing on his fourth roll, his lasagna abandoned for unknown reasons. And Spock was finishing the last of his salad. Senec's own soup was probably cold at this point, all the more reason to end tonight's observations. "Cadet Kirk, thank you for accompanying me to dinner. I hope it has not taken too much of your time," Senec said formally. "No problem. It was..." Kirk struggled to find an appropriate word. "Fun." An interesting word choice and another indication of social enjoyment. Senec nodded, mentally filing that subjective report with the other data to be synthesized when he was at home and meditating. Kirk and Spock stood, saluted, and Kirk left the dining room. Senec watched Spock as his eyes followed the cadet's figure as he made his way across the street and out of sight. Spock then turned to glare at Senec. "When I suggested that you study your classmates for insight into human behavior, it was not an endorsement for waylaying Academy cadets," Spock lectured, pulling out his credit chip to pay for the meal. Senec considered Spock's words. "I will endeavor to be more transparent in my efforts, as far as it does not interfere with the objective nature of my observations." "That will be acceptable," Spock replied, gesturing for Senec to lead the way out the door of the restaurant. As was their daily routine, Senec and Spock broke their morning fast together. It was usually a silent affair. Spock had fresh fruit and oatmeal, while Senec still preferred synthesized Vulcan pyrma. Terran food left much to be desired. After compiling his observations and synthesizing the data he had collected from Cadet Kirk's first meeting with Spock, which would be referred to as the restaurant encounter, Senec had formed a hypothesis. As Senec was almost a third through the semester, he surmised that time was of the essence, and he should move on to the next stage of experiment. Cadet Kirk received top marks in his last three command and conduct courses, Senec reported, taking his seat at the small table in the kitchen. Spock looked up from his fruit and raised an eyebrow. Senec interpreted this as permission to continue. He is often in the top 10% of his classes. In our shared history course, he is second only to myself. "Are you attempting human small talk?" Spock asked, confused by Senec's sudden attempt at conversation. "Cadet Kirk is an admirable human," the boy said, ignoring his cousin's question. "I find him to be intelligent, honorable, and industrious. Did you not?" I could not say, Spock said carefully, still unsure of Senek's interest. I would remind you that most humans prefer to socialize with peers of their own age. Senek nodded. Cadet Kirk is 26.3 Terran cycles old, he said, and then looked meaningfully at Spock. 1.6 cycles fewer than your own age. Cadet Kirk would prefer to socialize with you. Spock blinked. I think not. Senek pressed on. He is in the command track at the Academy, finishing his final year. My research indicates that he is very likely to receive a commission aboard the Shenandoah, Farragut, or most likely the Enterprise. Spock considered this information for 1.9 seconds longer than was necessary. Intriguing. How does your research allow you to come to such conclusions? Spock asked, reaching for his tea. Senek flushed a light green, a deeply embarrassing habit that most of his peers had long grown out of. But Spock had never commented on it. My afternoon classes are near the tactical training bays. Many of the instructors communicate regularly with Starfleet in the faculty lounge, which has poorly placed ventilation. You were eavesdropping, Spock supplied. Senek nodded. Spock looked down at him sternly. It is inappropriate to listen to conversations you are not meant to be privy to. You may have heard classified information. I instruct you to never repeat anything you have heard to me or any other being. Is that understood? Senek nodded again and turned to his breakfast. All in all, he considered breakfast to be a success for science. When Senek's mother took a position as a scientist aboard the Stockholm, he was given two choices: to stay in the house of his estranged father, Stutok, or be fostered with his distant cousin, Spock. If pressed, Senek could not clearly outline the reasoning used to choose Spock over his father. Stutok could provide a proper Vulcan education. The household staff would see to his needs adequately. It was a logical option, but one that Senek ultimately passed over. Senek had grown up hearing the whispers of Spock, son of Sarek, and the Lady Amanda. He was a toddler when Spock declined a position at the Vulcan Science Academy to apply to Starfleet, a scandal that rippled through the scientific community. To May, his mother, voiced no opinion on the matter as a scientist or relative. But every Vulcan child at school had somehow had something to say about half-human Spock. Blood traitor. Krenath. Bastard. Senek once repeated what he had heard to T'May. Duhik, she said. Foolish. Klalatar Prakori, Klalatar Pranaklirli. Infinite diversity in infinite combinations. To discount Spock was illogical, and to celebrate his uniqueness was what it meant to be Vulcan. Although, some do not remember, she went on to say. Some, he would learn later, included his father. 3 years later, Senek saw Spock for the first time. He had returned to Vulcan just before his graduation from Starfleet Academy, poised to be one of its most distinguished graduates. T'May brought Senek to pay their respects to their cousin. At the tender age of 6, he spent the entirety of the visit standing at his mother's elbow, watching the adults converse, in particular his elder cousin. Spock stood out among the throng of natural-colored robes, his cadet uniform like the sand of Vulcan itself. Senek watched him raptly, cataloging every difference, every unique mannerism and subtle expression. Spock was exotic. He was interesting and independent, and cultured in ways that Senek's peers were not. He embodied a future of possibilities that Senek was sure was not to be found on Vulcan. 2.7 years later, when Senek was 9 and Tomei gave him a choice. It was surprisingly simple to make. There were many things to dislike about his life on Earth. The climate, especially in San Francisco, was damp and cold. The food was too sweet or poorly spiced. Compulsory education was entirely deficient. The water tasted of shale. The commissaries did not carry Vulcan toothpaste. Senek came to the conclusion that the only thing he truly liked about Earth were humans. Unlike many of his fellow Vulcans, including his father, he found humans to be fascinating. At their worst, they were cruel to the point of madness, but at their best, they were ingenious, adaptable, and compassionate. And Cadet James Tiberius Kirk was, by every objective measure Senek could calculate, the summation of the best humanity had to offer. Senek tried to keep that in mind while following Cadet Kirk across the campus in the chilly evening air, 24 hours after the restaurant encounter. He was meters behind him, trying to keep pace behind the human, in a manner that was discreet but not creepy, as Kirk had stated. Senek had consulted a Terran Standard Dictionary about the word, and concluded that his faux pas was not that he had been observing Kirk, but that he had been too successful in being unseen. He would endeavor to be more obvious. Kirk was in the company of his Academy dormitory cohabitation partner, one Dr. Leonard McCoy. Kirk and Dr. McCoy were heading to a drinking establishment on the edge of campus, a popular destination for recreation and socialization during school hours. Senek watched as Kirk held the door for McCoy to enter first. When Dr. McCoy entered, Kirk turned in Senek's direction and waved at Senek. Senek felt pleased that he had achieved one of his objectives. Kirk had seen him and was extending a common Terran gesture of greeting. This was the sign of affirmation he was looking for. Senek must be following the unspoken rules of observing humanoid behavior. Senek crossed the street to the establishment, unsure where Cadet Kirk and Dr. McCoy would have gone. He looked around the moderately busy pub to see Cadet Kirk and Dr. McCoy taking seats at a table in the corner. Senek stood, mentally weighing the benefits of observation vantage point against being jostled by patrons. He made his choice and moved to sit at the deserted bar counter, where the mirrored backsplash allowed him to study his subject. "Hello," a buxom blonde bartender cooed. "What can I get you, sweetie?" "Tea, Earl Grey, hot," Senek said, tucking his feet under him to better see over the counter. "Please." She smiled as if Senek had said something amusing. "Are you waiting on someone?" she asked, making no move to get his beverage. "Yes." "Do they know you are here?" Senek nodded. "He has indicated his awareness of my presence." The bartender smiled again. "Peculiar." She left, allowing Senek to devote his attention to Cadet Kirk. He was slouched, one hand on a malted beverage, the other hand gesturing wildly while he spoke to Dr. McCoy. His shoulders were angled toward Dr. McCoy, but not parallel. The doctor was furtively looking toward the bar, his attention held by the blonde woman preparing Senek's tea. Kirk did not seem upset by Dr. McCoy's divided attention. "Earl Grey tea," the bartender said, depositing the steaming cup in front of Senek. "Where are you from, kid?" "Vulcan," he replied, grabbing the cup and sipping it. "Wow, long ways from home," she remarked. Senek looked at her quizzically. "What are you doing here?" "Yes, I'd like to know that too," a familiar voice asked behind his head. Senek spun around on the bar stool, almost eye level to Cadet Kirk, his companion Dr. McCoy standing next to him, darting nervous glances between Kirk Senek and the blonde bartender. I am continuing my observations, Senek replied. I interpreted your gesture as permission to resume, per our understanding yesterday. Kirk's mouth opened once, then shut. You waved at me, Senek explained. Kirk snorted. I waved at you to go away, Kirk hissed under his breath, for only Senek to hear. I had interpreted the hand motion to be one of greeting. I was attempting to adhere to your rule. Kirk raised a hand to rub his brow in possible frustration. Sorry about this, Christine, he said to the bartender. Christine smiled widely at Senek again, for no apparent reason. Friend of yours, Jimmy? Kinda, he said, and turned to Dr. McCoy. I think Senek and I need to talk. Do you mind? Kirk tilted his head slightly to the bar, seemingly communicating something important in a nonverbal manner. The doctor merely nodded, his eyes darting over to Christine again, his pupils dilating, and breathing rate increasing 23%. There was an almost imperceptible flush at his ears and cheeks. Fascinating. Senek hopped off the barstool and retrieved his tea from the counter, following Cadet Kirk to the table in the corner. Dr. McCoy took the vacated seat, sidling up to the bar to engage Christine the bartender in conversation. How long are you going to play at this? Cadet Kirk asked, taking his seat. Senek pondered the question. I am unsure what you mean. I am not engaging in recreational activities. I am observing your behavior. Let's try this another way, Kirk grumbled, and then sat up, hands folded on the table, fixing Senek with a steady gaze. The parameters of your observations are unacceptable. I am busy socializing off campus for the first time in weeks, and cannot have a Vulcan child following me around to every bar in Sausalito. And aren't you supposed to be home? Where is Spock? He is currently engaged in training exercises in the zero-gravity laboratory, Senek informed him. He is skilled as both tactician and scientist. He has aspirations to serve aboard a starship within the next year. How logical, Kirk replied. I'm sure he would also find it logical that you return home immediately. Negative, Senek said, taking a sip of his tea. It is logical to infer that he supports my dedication to my studies as a fellow scientist. Spock is considered to be intelligent and well-educated by both human and Vulcan standards. I'm sure he is, Kirk said, not arguing either point. Inside, Senek was deeply pleased. The cadet was quite obviously appreciative of Spock's skills and attributes, a very good sign for his hypothesis. However, a thought occurred to Senek that made him re-evaluate the past 2 weeks' observations. Cadet Kirk, are you patronizing this establishment to obtain a mate? Both of Kirk's eyebrows raised in astonishment. A mate? My research on human social conduct indicates that they often frequent establishments such as this one to meet potential mates. You are awfully preoccupied with my non-existent love life, Kirk replied. No. No mate. I'm here as Bones' wingman. He paused and went on to explain. I'm the guy who helps the friend approach a mate. I do not understand, Senek said, eyeing the doctor who was still sitting at the bar, this time watching Christine the bartender prepare a lime green concoction. Kirk sighed. That's Christine Chapel, one of the nurses at Starfleet Medical. My friend finds her attractive, but is uncomfortable approaching her. So, on the nights that she works, I sometimes come down here with him to give him a bit of social confidence to talk to her. Senek watched Dr. McCoy accept the lime green drink and smile enthusiastically. As soon as Christine turned away, the doctor grimaced. He does not like the drink she prepared, Senek reported. Yet he drinks it. Yeah, well, you do silly things like that when you like someone. Senek turned back to Cadet Kirk, filing the factoid with the other data he had collected on human courtship behavior. "Are they suited for each other?" Senek asked. Kirk shrugged. "Hell if I know. Why the interest in dating? Do you have some human kid you're interested in? Looking for some love advice? Because I have to warn you, Bones should not be your guide in the romance department." "Illogical. I have a wife," he replied, missing the bewildered expression on Cadet Kirk's face. Senek watched as Christine Chapel leaned over the bar and whispered something in Dr. McCoy's ear, making him laugh. "Well, that's going well," Kirk commented. Senek nodded, although not entirely sure what he was witnessing. "Time for me to head out, although I'm not sure I'll want to be studying in my room tonight." Senek did not understand what was inferred, but decided that it was irrelevant. His subject was on the move to another area, which was not anticipated this evening. He thought quickly of possible solutions to this new development. "I know of a suitable area for you to study," Senek said. The human looked at him with a quizzical look. "It is within the science building. You would not be disturbed." Kirk frowned. "The science building's closed by now." Senek reached within his Vulcan robes and pulled out a chip, watching Cadet Kirk's eyes alight with interest. "Not to everyone,"